So this is part 29 of a Mirth Hashem 49-50 part series about Torah, the way it was learned, the way it unfolded, who were the heroes of Torah. So we're now in the beginning of the Rishonim period. Last year I discussed the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, 11th century revolutionary, first person to write a condensed version of the Gemara. So you're seeing the Gemara text shifting. And, of course, it doesn't call it a Gemara, but it's a shrinkage of all the give and take in the conversation. Well, there's someone else in his century, and his name is not Yitzchak, as the Rif's name was. His father's name was Yitzchak. His name was Shlomo, of course. This is Shlomo Yitzchaki, who we know to be Rashi. What's to say about Rashi? I could give 49 shiurim just on Rashi. Let's first go through who he was and how he impacted the world of Torah just with his own family. And then we'll spend a little time trying to wrap our heads around how I think he revolutionized Torah. Again, these are my impressions. There's just so many facts and so much information about Rashi, but I just want to give my own viewpoint. So Rashi is, again, one of those, I wouldn't call him an autodidact. It's not as if he has no rabbis. He has plenty of rabbis. Most of them are in Germany. In France, in the 11th century, there are very, very few Torah personalities. There are, but not the caliber of whom are in Germany. So he has to go to Germany, then he comes back, and he and his family rebuild France into an 11th century Torah powerhouse, and until one could claim to the 14th century, when, of course, all the blood libels and the final expulsion, the burning of Shas, and then Rabbeinu Gershom, Rami Rothenberg and the rush were, you could say, the swan song of the French Jewry, in terms of Gedolim. In any event, he learned from a lot of Rabbeim, many of whom were influenced by Rabbeinu Gershom. We won't discuss Rabbeinu Gershom, but he would be the primary influence on Rashi through the Talmidim of his. Now, I said before that Rashi and his family single-handedly turned France into a center of Torah. Again, it's well known Rashi doesn't have any boys. He has daughters. One of his daughters in particular is Yocheved. She marries a man named Meir, and this becomes the powerhouse, the dynasty of Torah. They have three children who become, we'll just call them Balei HaTosfos, and I'll talk about Tosfos through the lens of the Rabbeinu Tam. One of Yocheved and Miri's children is Shmuel, the Rashbam, as we call him. One is Yaakov, the Rabbeinu Tam. I'll hopefully give a share about him tomorrow. And one of them is Yitzchak, the Rivam, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Bar Meir. They have a daughter who marries Shmuel of Vitri, who writes the Machzor of Vitri. This is one of the first Siddurim we have in the Western European Jewish world. Certainly, it's one of the most important Siddurim for Ashkenazic, and in particular French tradition. Shmuel, who writes a Sefer Machzor Mivitri, it's not written only by him, but part of it, they have a son named Rabbeinu Yitzchak, who becomes, again, one of the primary Balei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Yitzchak HaZaken. And then, without giving the entire family tree, almost, I'd say, 40-50% of the key line mainstream Balei HaTosfos are Rashi's progeny. So he single-handedly changes the face of Torah Jewry in France, and of course, historiographically, for eternity. Now, Rashi does not come. His father's not a big gadol. He doesn't have that, again, as that Rebbe figure, that one father figure, who's a big gadol. But he does come from a very miyuchas family. He can trace his way back to Hillel, which means you can trace your way back to David, because Hillel can trace his way back to David. So he becomes a way station for people looking to trace their way back to David HaMelech throughout history. If you're able to get back to Rashi, now, be careful if someone says, I'm a Ben Achor Ben after Rashi, because then they're wrong. Rashi had no sons. But you can trace your way all the way back to one of Rashi's daughters, and then you can make your way through Rashi back to Beis David, back to David HaMelech. And the Abba Arbanel supposedly was able, of course, the Abba Arbanel was closer to Rashi in time than many of us. Rashi's shadow or impact was felt so strongly, you can tell how strong the impact was just by listening to the amount of myths, which may or may not be true, but as people say, they don't tell myths or stories about people like me or you. They say them about Rashi. So one myth about Rashi is that he died while he was writing his Perush or Makos Daf Yutes, and he wrote or said the word Tahor, and his neshama ascended to Shemayim B'Tahara. Another story about Rashi is that his father, who was the jeweler of the king, had this beautiful stone, and the king was going to use the stone for paganistic or idol worship, and father threw the stone into the sea at great personal and financial cost and personal threat, because he would rather suffer an incalculable financial loss than support this king's idolatrous intent. And he was crying that he had lost so much money, and Eliyahu HaNavi himself came and assured him that he would be compensated for his heroism. You have a son like Rashi. And then, of course, the famous story, which is the fabled story of Rashi, the most famous legend of Rashi. Again, these are stories that are impossible to prove, but no one less than Shaul Chernyakhovsky, one of the great Israeli literary figures, quoted this, that when Rashi's mother was pregnant with him, she was walking down a street in Troy, where Rashi was born, Troy in France, and there was a crusader, may not have been a crusader, may just have been an average person, but riding on a horse very violently, very quickly, about to crush Rashi's mother as she was pregnant, and Rashi would never see the light of day. And miraculously, space carved out of the wall, and space was made in the wall, and the mother, out of the stone wall, could walk into the wall and be protected. Again, whether these stories are true or not, it just shows how fabled Rashi is through history. Now, if we're asking ourselves not who he was and how he impacted by his history, but how his writings, what makes his writings so different and so unique? So first of all, the obvious is it's copious, it's encyclopedic, it spans everything. It spans Gemara, it spans Tanakh. It's hard to find someone, maybe the Rambam, but we don't have the Rambam's writings on Tanakh. The Ramban, but the Ramban writes on sections of Tanakh, not on all sections of Tanakh, even his Perash Al HaTorah, it's not on every pasuk. Rashi is almost every word in the Gemara. It's mind-boggling to think about someone who covered, just coverage, the amount of Torah that Rashi covers. So that's the first thing that leaps out at Rashi. Obviously, it provides a platform that's a second issue. You could call it art scroll-like. It's not just art scroll, but it is art scroll. So both in Tanakh and in Gemara, recognizing the dwindling capabilities of people just to freshly read Gemara and make sense of it, or to just read Tanakh and make sense of it. So Rashi provide this platform where it's an easy to read and easy to understand translation. And sometimes it works against Rashi, so to speak, because we don't appreciate how much depth there is to Rashi, how much resonance there is to Rashi. Rashi should be taken as a commentator, not just as a translator or an art scroll platform provider. Sometimes it does a disservice to our appreciation of Rashi, but it certainly is the first translation, simplification of Gemara. So anyone who would simplify the text, would translate it, would simplify it. Again, it doesn't translate to a different language like Moses Mendelssohn translated to German. That was a big controversy. But to take a complex text and provide a Mishneh Berurah or an art scroll or even a Shulchan Aruch, basing itself on the Beis Yosef, who knows if without Rashi's, how should I say it, gravitas and reverence, if it would have been something which would have been accepted, because the Torah is the Torah, and how could you create step downs to the Torah? It took someone of the caliber and the resonance of Rashi to create that validation. So it's the copious breadth and sweep. It's the creating a new genre. And in that, he created a different new genre where he seamlessly weaves, especially on Tanakh, he seamlessly weaves Midrashim and Perushim. So Midrashim are becoming much more mainstream. Again, in some cases, one could claim at some disadvantage, or not some disadvantage, but some cost, because it becomes harder to disassociate the Midrashim for the simple reading of the text. So people that aren't trained to differentiate or to discern between Midrashim and the actual text assume that Midrashim are the actual story rather than overlays to the story. But there's no question that it validates and it mainstreams and it incorporates Midrashim within our imagination. So how much of Rashi is his own voice? How much of Rashi is just simply quoting Chazal? There are academicians who spend time, if you want, the most famous Rashi is the Berliner Rashi. I'll talk about that in a moment. But a high percentage of Rashi is just quoting Midrashim from Chazal, excerpting them, and there's decisions in what he excerpts and how he chooses to excerpt. So that's the third revolution of Rashi, that he creates not just a new genre, a step-down interpretive level, but he creates a seamless Rashi al HaTorah, Rashi on Tanakh. Obviously, Rashi and the Gemara is a different experience. There's a lot of corruption in Rashi. If you open Rashi al HaTorah, we don't really know what he wrote, what was added to. Why? Because when Rashi wrote it, he was writing them in Kuntresim. That's what people called them, Perush HaKuntres, the scroll, because he would write these scrolls of Perushim, and they would circulate throughout France or in printing presses, and people would get hold of a scroll and be so captivated by Rashi, they would use that scroll as their go-to. That'd be the safer they would take to shul on Shabbos during Kriyas HaTorah. Then after Shabbos, they would write down the Chiddushim on that scroll. Paper was expensive. But it became their go-to based learning safer. And then that scroll would be passed to another town, and people would mistakenly assume And some of the chiddushim that the previous owner of that scroll, the previous reader of that scroll had written down, was actually Rashi. Remember, some of the copying to the next scroll, most of it was done manually, menial labor, people who weren't educated, so they just saw text on the side. They couldn't discern what was Rashi's original writing and what were just things which were added later. So it becomes almost a dynamic sefer. And then finally, what you hear in Rashi and you feel in Rashi, again, Rashi in both Alatara and Alashas, you can't write Rashi without being relentless, comprehensive, encyclopedic, but you also have to be knowledgeable in all areas of life, of food, of language, of metallurgy, of agriculture, of society. I mean, it's just stunning. There's no grandiose, bombastic descriptions of Torah Mada and whether broader knowledge does or help or doesn't help or hinder. But this is a man who, I don't know if he engaged in classic philosophy and the meaning of life, but just raw data, raw horsepower, raw knowledge. It's just stunning. You just can't write a sefer at that sweep unless you know everything. So those are some of the things you see in Rashi's writing. Encyclopedic, the coverage, every word, every line. Creating a new genre, a step down from the original text to make it easier for people to read. Again, people don't appreciate that Rashi's also a commentator, not just a step-down art scroller. Number three, the seamless weaving of Midrashim into the text, validating, making the Midrashim much more available. Number four, this broad encyclopedic knowledge. And number five is that it becomes, again, a baseline text that people write texts about, and that's at least to a lot of confusion. Again, the Berliner version of Rashi is an attempt to separate the original text of Rashi from some of the additions. So if you're really interested in trying to, at some point, read through what was originally Rashi, because, and again, it differs from version to version. You open up Bekoros Gedolos, you'll see one version of Rashi. You open up Toras Chaim, you see another version of Rashi. So I think Toras Chaim tried to clip off some of the non-essential stuff. But even Bekoros Gedolos, you'll see parentheses, and you'll see Quintus Achron, and Perish Achers, and ideas which obviously Rashi himself didn't write.